Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Jabber Rahsaani's Alien Outpost. This is Jabber Rahsaani's debut feature-length film. Alien Outpost is shot somewhere between a documentary, not quite found footage, and a traditional movie, where we follow the soldiers of Outpost 37. They are macho, salt of the earth, best of the best soldiers that have been on the front lines against a failed alien invasion. Most of the movie shows us a snapshot of what life is like in Outpost 37 and builds up to a finale where our heroes take down the alien base against direct orders. It turns out the alien base was setting up to make a second wave of the invasion, which happens anyway, but I guess it was slowed down by our heroes. It's very confusing who's, it's hard to tell who's the underdogs and who's not the underdog. It's almost like a Star Wars movie where the Empire's already losing, but we need underdog. I don't know, Tom. What did you think the goals of the creator of Alien Outpost were?
I have no idea. Part of the problem with this movie is it seems like it is very much trying to make an analogy to the Iraq War. And there's this, they've traced the aliens down to a kind of a demilitarization zone in Pakistan. That's where the movie takes place. That's obviously not filmed there. It doesn't look anything like Pakistan. But anyway, they've kind of traced the aliens, and the aliens are in this wilderness. And the plot is that most of the aliens, what they call heavies, have left. And there's a few kind of in the Pakistani woods or landscape somewhere, and that's what they're guarding against. There's also at this time a certain rising hostility amongst local Pakistanis to the American presence, and they are representing a kind of threat to Outpost 37. And we're not at the beginning entirely sure who's the greater threat, though it seems over time that the heavies are the greater threat. The Pakistani threat seems to be, though I'm not entirely sure, a product of the aliens mind controlling people.
I agree, right? That I think that's what we're supposed to walk away with.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is weird. Nobody realized that before.
Yeah.
There's tons of indicators. There's the temperatures of the bodies. There's the way they walk and stuff when they're under mind control.
Yeah, they kind of are able to, when people are mind controlled, and they don't just mind control Pakistanis, we see them mind controlling soldiers as well, American soldiers and presumably soldiers of other nationalities. But the soldiers somehow usually manage to communicate in some way to the outside world. Even if that communication fails, and it often fails. So I think that's what we're supposed to get away with. And I guess, yeah, they should have maybe noticed something odd is going on, but they never do. I guess when somebody's firing a gun at you, you don't really note very much. But that seems to be that's the conflict. And you think this is something to do with the Iraq War and maybe the relative importance of the Iraq War to the Afghanistan War at this time, 2014, when this movie is made, because this outpost they're in is supposed to be sort of forgotten. It's the most dangerous one, but it's also where soldiers go in a war that's kind of over. This alien invasion thing is over. They're kind of cleaning things up. And yet what people don't realize is when you try to clean things up, the war isn't over. It's not over for these guys. They are engaged in this kind of daily conflict. And that was sort of the narrative we got with the Iraq War compared to the Afghanistan War at this point, a little more than a decade ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is what I thought they were going for. And I guess if you follow that line, we should appreciate the soldiers who are still out there doing their duty, even when they're not in front of a camera or something like that. I thought the movie might take a more critical approach to these sort of military engagements. I don't see any evidence of that in the film. When you watch it all the way through, the soldiers are the heroes. They're doing the good. They're doing the Lord's work in cleaning up these aliens. The Pakistani people turn out not to be the enemies. They're also kind of victims of these aliens. So I think they're also attempting to dance away from the potential accusations of bigotry or racial insensitivity with regard to the Pakistanis. I don't know how successful they are with that, but I think they're attempting to dance away from that. But it is kind of hard outside of that reading of it's about the soldiers who are continuing to fight wars that we think are over. That's what I think they're going for here. And I think that's what they're kind of saying.
I think that idea, the soldiers that are still out there, that makes a lot more sense than what I thought the goal of the creators were. Which, from a movie-making standpoint, it's kind of cool that they're making an alien invasion movie without showing the aliens. Except then they do show the aliens.
They show them a lot, yeah.
I know, right. And in my memory of the movie, you know, I had watched it 8 years ago, I thought we never did see the aliens. So that was the movie I remembered watching. I feel like if it wasn't Raisani, who I think you had pointed out last week may have taken over for the new Avatar Last Airbender show on Netflix. I think he might have done special effects for Game of Thrones. I think he's a special effects guy.
He's a VX guy and has been for a number of projects.
So I think my idea that it was a movie about an alien invasion without showing the aliens doesn't hold up, but I thought that's what it could have been. But he's a special effects guy, so he probably did what he could with the special effects. I also think they just wanted to make a super, super macho movie, right? They're always playing pranks on each other and showing you how it is when you're hanging out with just the guys. And how cool it is to be American, right? We know what the orders are, but we make the right decisions anyway. And if we have to get in trouble for that, we own up to that mistake. And like that seemed to be a recurring theme as well. Going against orders, it either worked out or didn't work out. But either way, you're cool, bro. We're cool now, bro. We understand that we either should or should not have followed those orders.
Yeah, and that's a fairly old trope. You see that amongst a lot of military things, science fiction, etc., where it is the noble hero who has to, in order to do the right thing, occasionally buck the system. That's a fairly common trope. And I think also the kind of broiness that you're talking about, which can get kind of annoying after a while, mostly because we get it. It's like, it's tough out here. And so you have to develop a hard outer shell. That stuff can get a little annoying, especially since it isn't organized. I think that's the problem with it. I don't mind that because those kind of circumstances, I imagine, breed such behavior. It's probably necessary. But usually with these kind of movies, you see this sort of outsider who comes in and has to become acclimated to this brotherhood. And becoming acclimated to the brotherhood is necessary for survival. So they're tough on the people because they want them to respond in such a way as to adapt to this extremely dangerous circumstance in which they're in. So it seems like a kind of cruelty or a hazing or whatnot. As it goes along, it turns out that it's a form of almost like survival training that then becomes a sort of expression of love amongst these brothers, right? They're able to bond that way.
Does it? I mean,
not in this movie.
That was their goal. Okay, good.
No. I'm saying that's
the goal. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, got it.
In this movie, it's just not organized in any way. And so you have these three outsiders, and you kind of forget who they are. They have one who's very young and unrealistically carries around a picture of his mom, which he kisses a lot. He's the one who's teased very often. And at one point, the sergeant or the more senior officer sits down with him and goes, I know they're giving you a hard time, but let you know, those men will have your back every day and twice Sunday. and you get this point, like, okay, this is the turning point. This is the point where he gets accepted and then he does something to justify his acceptance into the group. And you see this in the next scene. He's out there and one of the guys who's teasing him offers him either marijuana or a cigar. I couldn't tell which, but that's what he offers him. You see, okay, there's a bridge being built here. Now he's going to do something. And then he immediately gets shot in the head and killed, and we're done with him. And so that kind of arc of development, like I said before in last week, that gun, that Chekhovian gun that's loaded, that you see then later, you would hope he's redeemed or he's accepted by virtue of good and brave action, it never comes to be because we kill him off. And since his only definable trait is that he has a sort of Oedipal relationship with his mother, apparently, we don't know that much about him, so we don't care that much that he gets killed off. We don't have that kind of affection for him. And it just doesn't work, I think. And I think that's an example with you're saying where it's very, very bro-y, where I think the annoyance comes from it's not doing anything. The broiness isn't organized in terms of character development.
I agree, and I think we're already talking about it, but Tom, how do you think they did with the money they had in Alien Outpost?
I don't know. The aliens, the heavies, they don't look great. They look like a PlayStation 2 cutscene, right? They have that kind of, they're the same walk. They always have the same expression. They always walk at the same pace. I don't think you ever see them run or...
Yeah, but I'm going to give them credit for that. I think they had a decent animation, right? A decent GIF, I'll even say. Mm-hmm. And they used it pretty well all over the place.
Yeah.
It did look a little PS2. But again, it was way more than I was expecting. I really thought we were never going to see the aliens.
Which I would have preferred.
I would have preferred. But I think this is what they wanted to do. I think they wanted to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it almost was like when you're playing the original Doom, right? They moved kind of like,
yeah,
you know, like when you're looking straight on, they were straight on, and you were always looking straight on.
Yeah,
no other.
Yeah, you're not seeing the size or the back of their heads or anything like that. Yeah,
but I as I said, I thought that kind of worked, and honestly, the movie looks really good, especially compared to some of the other movies that we've done on this show. Right in the beginning, the helicopter scenes. I was sitting there thinking, I think they're on helicopters. It could have been green screened. But all that was pretty good. Like, it felt way wider. A lot of the shots were wider than in a lot of the movies that we do. It wasn't as claustrophobic. I mean, most of it takes place at the outpost, but they do move around a little bit. They do get out and move around. And I thought it looked okay when it was like that.
It's a little boxed, right? They're not really using a lot of widescreen. You're seeing enough to...
Compared to coherence? Compared to time-lapse?
Sure.
Compared to Cube?
Yeah, you're using more widescreen than Cube, a movie that takes place in a cube.
That's what I mean. So compared to the other movies on this list, it was kind of refreshing to...
Oh, to have a little more landscape?
Yeah.
Yeah. You never do get that like wide, open look at the landscape. There's nothing aesthetic about any of the shots. They're functional.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Now that you're pointing that out, I couldn't tell you the layout of Outpost 37.
That's a huge problem. And that was what I was going to say in terms of budget, was it's not just adding effects. I don't know what that outpost looks like. I know close to the door is where the main general is. And he always jumps out right at the right time.
Like an NPC.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to say what I got to say, and then I'm going back in here.
Yeah. Yeah, he serves his plot, which, you know, usually like anybody out here is a commando under my watch. You know, his like cliche lines. Then he jumps back in. I hope there's a bathroom in there, because otherwise he's just holding it. But I have no idea where the other things are in that space. I don't know where they sleep relative to where they watch the landscape. And I don't know what they're doing there. They're like looking over a small fence to see if people are coming. You know, like there's no, it really looks like it's about the size. It looks like it's like about 10 by 40. And they had a little house for the commander. And then everything else is filmed indoors somewhere. And I have no idea what the outpost looks like. I have no idea.
That's all true. But again, I got to give them credit. It still felt like that worked for me. I don't know why. Again, compared to Beyond the Infinite, 2 minutes, all the ones that we've watched where there's literally one set, Summertime Machine Blues, I mean, that they got outside a little bit in that, actually. Maybe that's a bad comparison. But compared to the other movies we've done, and especially the third act, right? The third act, they go on an adventure. They actually go somewhere. And it's all... what, the deserts of California or whatever.
Wherever they are. Yeah.
It's like, as you're pointing out, and I don't think I realize this, it's not necessarily then interesting or well lit or like silhouettes or, you know, something to draw your eye. But I was still surprised at how many sets we got, even though in retrospect, yep, they all look like a PS2 game. sets, right? Like,
yeah. But if you think of Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes, that set was incredibly simple. But what it gave you was, because of that particular concept, and we won't go into it because we guys can listen to that episode, is it was about the layout of the set. And so they used that, and so they gave it to you. And it wasn't particularly time-consuming to show you the layout or expensive. It used set well. And this is a movie about setting. And it's kind of also a movie about characters in the setting, but that's what builds these characters, right? It's the conflict is the setting. We are stuck in a sort of stand-in for hell. Here's hell. Here's how we live in that space. And you really need, I think, to give a better sense of location. I think part of some of the problems, too, I had with the movie in terms of plot is that I don't find these characters incredibly distinct.
No, I was filling out, audience, we have show notes for all these, to at least for me, to keep everything straight. And I was going through the cast on IMDb. The only name I recognized was North. Mm-hmm. Every other name could have been anything, and all the names are like that.
Yeah, they're just But and the problem is because these characters don't have any kind of arc of development, right? You have that one sergeant who he's been through it, but he doesn't really make a change. And then you have these odd things where you have a German soldier who comes to them. It's like, I know what you're up against, and I will guard this place. And they interview him because it's a fake documentary, he says, well, I lost my father in this war that the aliens invaded, and I want to, you know, do something for him. But we never get anything beyond that. We don't get the, I thought they were going to do something with his dad that was either going to allow him to rise to the occasion or actually not be as good a soldier as the rest because he has this trauma, or there's something else, or there's something going on with him, or something like that.
No, it was more like, and my dad says so too.
Right?
You have to believe me because my dad said so. Like, it's kind of the.
it's a weird thing, but he doesn't do anything. Mm-mm. Like, he kind of jokes around with the guys, and he's just one of the guys. And why? Why did they bring this? Why is there a scene where we meet a new guy? He's just like, there's nothing different about him. His accent is even so slight. You wouldn't notice it, except he has a little German badge on his uniform.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Well, and that was another weird thing, right? The movie was so excited that the UN dissolved, and then the United States Defense Force replaced it.
Yes.
The United States Defense Force, and then I guess other countries kind of joined it. It was like, oh, the UN is so dumb because everybody's there. We really just need the US to solve everything. Like, it was a strange
solution. It's a US-centric movie, right? It seems to have and kind of sort of John Wayne kind of feel to it, right? Where it's, you know, it's kind of an old-fashioned American cowboy film where there's the sort of American sense of rugged individualism and duty, and that kind of Americanness is what's going to save the day, and this kind of UN powerless diplomacy just it isn't valid anymore. It doesn't work anymore, and that, I think that's what they were going. That at least communicated. I saw that. I could read that, right?
Yeah. You know, I've never watched a John Wayne movie. I wonder if this is a retelling of a John Wayne movie, right? You have, like, Native Americans, you have the bad guys, the good guys.
Yeah, I don't know. They tend to be very good. I mean, the John Wayne, there's very good John Wayne movies. But I don't know if there's a John Wayne movie exactly like it, but it feels like a rated R version of a potential John Wayne movie with a little less skill.
How do you feel about the interview shots, the found footage shots, kind of versus the traditional movie shots? How do you think that worked?
I mean,
I thought it was a good idea. I'm gonna answer my own question.
Okay, here, go for
it. You're walking. I thought the interviews, I'll say they worked, but just to like give you a break from the guns firing. Mm-hmm. Like I thought in terms of pacing, I liked that we cut to a nice calm, you know, all of a sudden they're ghost eyed and they're answering questions as if they don't know the answers to anything. But it was a little strange, but I liked the pacing of that. And then one thing I did like about the, I'll call it found footage, but it wasn't really found footage. It was news reporter shooting, like pre-edited news reporter shootings. I don't know what you call it.
I thought it was embedded journalism.
Embedded journalism, great. I liked those. I don't know why I like this, but every time there was an explosion or whatever, there was kind of like a MPEG effect on the video, as if the camera was struggling there for. I thought that was pretty well done. I thought that was subtle enough.
Yeah, and apparently when the aliens shoot their laser guns or whatever it is, that creates a kind of sonic disturbance, and so the camera would kind of flash or lines would go through it when the aliens shot their guns. So they were conscious of that, I guess. It works as well. I just don't like, I've not seen very good found footage movies. It just comes off as hokey, and in this it doesn't make sense, because the guy in the end of the movie, the guy who blows up the alien ship that's sending signals to the second invasion, he's the journalist, and so he falls and drops his camera and then sets off the bomb, which I'm interested, did they pick up his camera?
Or was it streaming somewhere?
Was it stream? I guess so, but I was
in
just going like...
In 2014, I mean, it wasn't too that far, it was a little bit in the future, but in 2014, would they have been thinking about streaming? Yeah. You know, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, did they take his camera? Why, you know? But I think it's always, the found footage thing always is a sort of gimmick that, what does it give you that not doing it gives you?
Again, the pacing. I've not seen a lot of found footage movies, but the first Hunger Games movie, when it starts, they're doing shaky cam. I'm like, why are they doing shaky cam in the Hunger Games movie? And then when they start showing kids killing each other, I'm like, oh, they need the shaky cam so that they don't show the kids killing each other. So then it gives it a more on the ground feeling. And I thought the movie did a pretty good job of moving between interview, that on the ground feeling, and then just more traditional movie. I'll call it a wide shot. It wasn't that wide, but a stable cam that kind of showed you what was going on. I actually thought it did a pretty good job between those three.
I think of the Jason Bourne movies, which does a lot of shaky cam, and I think it does it really well, but it doesn't have to deal with the kind of silliness of this is really happening, or this is camera work. You could still integrate that sort of rough and tumble style, that handheld style, without having to do this thing where people are talking to the cameraman.
Turn the camera off, or you can ignore the camera. It's fine.
No, yeah, or here's this gun is, you know, that type of thing, or the, you know, the camera has to fall, and they have to explain how there's a camera in the car and a camera in the, like, the, apparently the reporter is running in with the three guys, you know,
to take down the alien base.
It always ends up becoming like, this is a little silly, and I think the interviews, while it helps the pacing, it kind of chills out now and then, where you're able to talk to these guys. You get nothing from those interviews.
No, I know, it's such a
shame. The interviews are I can't remember who was interviewed on what topic. And like when the guys, they show a cut at the end of the guys who died, like I didn't even realize two of those guys died. but you have just kind of, they're spouting cliches in those interviews, basically. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't really have a sense of who those people are. So the interviews don't, even though they're kind of a canned way of constructing character, well, we'll interview the character and he'll say what he thinks, as opposed to them doing things which reveal their character motivations and their personalities. Even with that handicap, they're not revealing those characters. Just everybody's a good American soldier.
Right.
In the, you know, doing the American thing to keep us safe from aliens
and zombies. Do you think a budget would have helped this movie?
I think I think so. I think you would have had more space to move, more settings for them to travel to. I actually think the movie is, you'd been able to develop more set pieces, I think. That's something that's lacking in the movie, because the settings, the two major settings are the outpost, and then when they get to the alien transmission station, they're neither of those are inspirational settings, and they're the only two ones. And the outpost stuff is, what happens there isn't that interesting. I mean, there's an attack in the beginning, then the Pakistani man who they become friends with, he kind of goes in there and attacks them a little bit. I think an alien attacks them, and whatever. There's nothing very interesting happens there. The more interesting stuff happens at the second site, which is the climax of the film. I think with a budget, you would be able to put some more action set pieces in. Sort of like, oh, here's a place we have to go to learn about where the transmission station is, or learn more about this, that the fact that this is not the only invasion. There is a second invasion planned, and we just happen to be in the outpost that allows us to uncover that fact. And so then you could use the landscape, and you could kind of lean into the more Western cowboy John Ford thing a little more. I think that would have been a lot better if you kind of made it into this Western, right? These people who are fighting against, instead of, you know, American Indians, they're fighting against heavies, the extraterrestrials. And regardless of what your ethical problems might be with that, at least it's a movie. At least it's something there, you know. I think that would have improved it quite a lot. And I think they need another set piece. I don't know. What do you think?
I think the movie would have done better with less money. I think they would have had been more creative with the story beats and the storytelling, right? Lose the visuals on the aliens. And honestly, where I thought they were going was that the aliens invaded, started to mind control the heads of the nation, so then the aliens could leave because they already did what they wanted to do. So the ones that were still left here were just shepherds. And I thought the big reveal was going to be just like the zombies that are like attacking them, right? These mind-controlled locals that are attacking, they're getting orders from mind-controlled aliens, and their whole thing is futile. It's just, it's here to give them hope as the aliens are, whatever the reason they came to Earth, they're accomplishing that goal. That was the only reason I could imagine the aliens would have lost in the first invasion, was that they actually succeeded with what they wanted to do, was take over. So, and that's obviously a different movie, so it's, I'm also completely changing. But I thought a smaller budget would have forced them to do something more along those lines, not as direct, not as straightforward, a little more Twilight Zone-y or something like that.
Yeah, I think a Twilight Zone. That's what I thought was going to happen. I thought with there was going to be some more Twilight Zone-y stuff when you have the soldier. First of all, I think it's the Pakistani friend who initially attacks them, and then, you know, when they save the soldier and he attacks them and they have to shoot him, which they do very quickly.
Yeah. Well,
shoot him right away.
Well, because they have the temperature thing. I don't know why they didn't shoot him immediately.
Yeah.
Right? So the first time we see I'll call him a zombie, is they're for some reason on the march talking to some locals, and this other local shows up and he's walking weird. They don't have a temperature gauge at that point. And maybe post-COVID-19 world, we all have temperature gauges in our house. So maybe I'm just thinking everybody should have a temperature gauge. But as soon as their temperature is 60 degrees instead of 90 degrees, you shoot them. They're under control of an alien.
Whatever. They don't know at that point. With that kid during the goat scene?
Yeah.
They don't know anything about mine.
They don't. But when Salim shows back up, they're watching him. They're like, man, there's something off. His temperature's low. And they're not acting like it's the first time they saw it. They said, oh, this is classified information. We can't tell them that the temperature's low. So that's why I thought it was going to lead to a bigger
thing.
Conspiracy.
Yeah, and they set it up with the security forces.
Yep.
There's the right. Security forces in white who come, and they're just like, this is our territory now. Like, why?
To show how macho you are. Like, no, you got to stand up to them until you get the orders from somebody above you. Like, that's...
And then they eventually have to stand down. But even in terms of plot, I thought, okay, this is going to be where the kind of plot folds are.
Right.
Right, is that we're going to learn, oh, there's something going on between the heads of state or some powerful agency or individual and these aliens. And maybe the aliens aren't really the bad guys, that, you know, they're whatever. But the security forces, I don't know why they're there in the movie. We never see them again. I don't think they do anything. Like, I look back on the plot, I'm like, oh, yeah, that scene. What was the point of that? That's a loaded gun that just never gets fired.
It's another one. Yep.
Yeah, it's bizarre that no one ever thought, hey, why is this in the movie? Why did you have this scene? And I think to your point, if we're rewriting the movie, which I think is fine, I don't have a problem with it. I think that's far more interesting to be like more of a Twilight Zone thing. And right. that would be the other way to go, right? Either you cut the budget and it's like, I'm sorry, guys, you have to get clever. I know you're a VX guy, but you got to get clever with this. You don't have the budget to even show the aliens, never mind laser fire and, you know, whatever other fake ammo and whatnot.
That stuff looked good too. I gotta say, but
the gunfights look fine. I think they looked fine. I think the settings didn't look great, but you know, I think they actually, the choreography between the soldiers and the gunfighting looked good. But you know, so you could either go with the budget cuts where you're just not showing that stuff and we have to uncover a mystery, or you jack the budget way up and make it, you know, an Independence Day style picture.
Cowboys and aliens. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I guess if you brought the budget way down, it would be almost more like Reservoir Dogs. And yeah. An invasion movie without the alien invasion. You're showing the aftermath or the, yep.
And my interpretation, as I said before, is I as far as I could tell, it's like, when you think the war is over, the war isn't over, a la Afghanistan, which I think is, you know, that might be what he's going for. And considering the sort of ethos of the thing, I think he does want to appreciate, like, the American soldier who's in danger and nobody really realizes it, right? It's the soldier who's not in World War II. Everybody is like, this is Greatest Generation. They, you know, buy war bonds, support these people. This is amazing. We're going to celebrate them. And then there's a bunch of people in Afghanistan who people have forgot that war was still going on.
Right.
That makes sense to me.
And that's a great idea and a great story to tell.
Yeah.
I don't know this is the movie to do that.
It doesn't do it. No. Yeah. It doesn't do it just because it can't do normal competent storytelling things correctly.
So Tom, does it make the recommend list?
Absolutely. Stick it on there. I guess not, considering our critiques and the fact I don't. Well, we've said some positive things. You certainly have.
Yeah, you know, it's gonna be a no for me. It's really close though, because it's almost exactly the kind of movie I'm looking for, where I feel like we got to see exactly what the director wanted to make. There's something about this one that I don't know if it's worth going through if you're going through a list of movies that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't do the thing that these KAM movies do that I really love, which is this sort of like small ironies that don't always rise above the level of riability, right? A lot of these movies are, that's kind of a little stupid, but they're playing with paradoxes or ironies or things like that. This movie is a big budget Hollywood film without the big budget,
right? Which would be perfect for keep making movies.
I don't think so. I feel like the keep making movies that you bring forward are like about the absence of the big budget film, right? They always feel like closed doors or small or dealing with a surprise ending. They feel very Twilight Zone-y.
Yep.
Right? That's the kind of genre that seems to be emerging from these low budget movies. So
maybe this is the anti keep making movie.
Yeah.
Right? It on paper it seems to fit the bill, but it doesn't.
it doesn't in expression, yeah.
Well, it's official, audience. Alien Outpost has not made the list. Maybe we'll watch Jabber Rassani's other movie. And I hope Jabber Rassani keeps making movies. I'd watch more of his films. Audience, if you've seen his other one, let us know on social media. We're at Talking Studios, and maybe we'll check it out.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, If you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss River from Japan from 2023, made by the same group that made Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. Stay tuned for our first impression of River.
Wow, Talking Studios.
Next week, we'll be discussing River. Tom, how was your watch?
I really liked this movie. We had done before on this show, I believe it was on this show, where he did Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. It was made by the same director and writer, right? Same team?
Yep. Junta Yamaguchi, and yeah, I don't know the writer's name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Writer is Makoto Ueda, Ueda, if I've pronounced that as best I could. And it's a delightful little movie. Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes is also a delightful little movie. I like this even more. Beyond the 2 Minutes, you sort of dazzle at the coordination. It's a movie about this camera coordination in order to capture these images. And we won't go into Beyond the 2 Minutes, but if you see the movie, you know what I mean. They have to coordinate these kind of, they have to do a lot of choreography in order for the movie to make sense. In this, it's Groundhog Day, but in 2 minutes. Every 2 minutes, it's repeated. And you have these kind of delightful comic characters who start going through these different phases every 2 minutes or every few groups of 2 minutes. And they're really funny. They're really delightful. They're even very sweet. There is moments of seriousness, but they're sort of fleeting. The ending is deeply silly, but it's within the spirit of the movie. And I think that the great strength of it is the lead, who is this woman working in a, what would we call this place? It's not a restaurant. It's a hotel.
No, it's a hotel, a ryokan.
It's a hotel.
It's a, okay. A resort, a very, very fancy hotel.
Okay, very fancy hotel. One of the women who is the workers at the hotel, we start every 2 minute segment on her face, and she has this beautiful, wide-eyed, kind of innocent look, and her spirit just floods the movie, and her little delight and confusions become our delight and confusions. And I think it's the fact that these filmmakers know that they have just a great face to focus on. They've kind of learned that lesson, right? We're going to not just have this fun little situation, but we're going to have an actor who's got a lot of life in her. And that's what grounds it. That's what makes it enjoyable and lovely. How about you, KJ? How was your response?
I also really like this film, Tom. It kind of came up while we were doing the Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes episode that Junta Yamaguchi had another film. And we really wanted to get our hands on it, so I'm glad we did. Audience, I vet all these films before I suggest them for the show, so I watched it a few weeks ago, loved it. I loved it on my second watch. I really encourage the audience to go check it out. It's really fun. I don't think it overstays its welcome. As soon as it starts to do that, it kind of picks up in a different direction. They do a really good job with the pacing. And like Tom's saying, it's just delightful. You're going to have a smile on your face most of the movie. You're going to enjoy it. River is available on Asian Crush, which I guess is a streaming service. I hadn't heard of it before, but it's available on Asian crush at the time of this recording.